Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Professor Is In podcast. I am Kel Weinhold, and I am the productivity coach for the Professor Is In. And you can find everything we do at theprofessorisin.com or Facebook Professor Is In or Twitter Professor Is In.
And I am Dr. Karen Kelski, the founder of the Professor Is In and the person who works with my team to help you get your job documents, applications ready for the job market, negotiate offers, and also execute your exit from the academy should you decide to do that. And if you would like to become a supporter of this podcast, which we would love, you can do that by going to theprofessorisin.com/podcast, and you will see the link to do that, the live link on any of our podcast episode entries.
And if you are a podcast supporter slash member slash benefactor, you also get access to our private podcast page where next week we'll be doing an Ask Me Anything and starting the first week of February on Fridays at 9 a.m. Pacific, we will have a revived version of Facebook Live, except it will not be Facebook. It will be Mighty Networks, and it will not be Facebook. It will be Zoom, but it will be live. So come and join us because we're going to start up those conversations that we enjoyed so much in the before times.
In the before times. All right. Well, so today we had a whole discussion about what to talk about, and there's so much to talk about, really. And, you know, the thing is, listeners, Kel and I always have a version of this conversation before almost every episode, which is a discussion. Should we talk about the kind of emotional, psychological, I guess, challenges of where do you belong? And if you can't get a job or you decide you want to leave, how do you define who you are and what you are and what you should do? And what do you lose and how do you grieve it? Which is a perennial need, urgent need, really, that just goes on and on for our listeners. Or do we just give you, here's how you write a cover letter.
Basically,
which seems so terribly prosaic, and yet I know that that's what people come to the Professor Is In for, is how do you write a damn cover letter? How do you write a job talk? How do you negotiate a job offer? How do you write a grant proposal? And we know you guys need that help too. So we are always in a, you know, we're always having this conversation, and today we decided we'd talk about how to do a Zoom campus visit, following up on our last episode, which was how to do an interview. But please know that we're really, really open to hearing from you. Anything you want to tell us about that particular query, we are really open to hearing what you have to say. Like, way more on cover letters, or please, no more on cover letters. Like, we're totally open to either of those opinions or anything else.
And what we'll try to do, and what I'm going to try to do today, because if we're really honest, basically the conversation we have every week is, are we going to talk about what Karen does, or are we going to talk about what I do?
That's true.
That's basically what it comes down to. So today, in this concrete advice about campus visit interventions or campus visits over Zoom, I actually do those. I'm the person who does all of the intervention work.
So that's actually a false dichotomy, because you also, even though I'm the advice giver,
right,
in general, and you're the emotional support person in general and coach, you are nevertheless the person who, as you said, does interview interventions and campus visit interventions.
Right. And so what'll be interesting today is that I'll probably end up a lot more on the psychological side of things, which I do talking to clients as well. I mean, I do all the, this is how you answer this question, this is how you do this. But anyway, long enough intro. Here's the thing. Campus visits are super hard in the before times. They are exhausting. They are, there's nothing quite like having to be on for some period of time. If you're in the UK, you get a break. It's a pretty short period of time, comparatively speaking. In the US, a campus visit can be up to 2 days. Now, so they're hard. So let's just, what's that thing they say in law? Stipulate. Let's just stipulate.
Stipulate to the fact.
Stipulate to the fact that they're hard.
Yeah.
In Zoom, they have a whole different kind of hard.
Mm-hmm. You're not being marched around through a total of 5 to 6 meals, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, breakfast, lunch. or whatever, right, and all of that.
But you're not being marched around through breakfast, lunch, dinner. So you have less ability to read what's going on. They have less ability to understand you in context. So you might say something in one part of an interview that can get completely corrected at the next breakfast, lunch, dinner, mm-hmm. or something that you do really well one time and then it all goes to shit at the next breakfast, lunch, dinner. So it's always not always positive. But I think that it's hard for the same reasons. It's intense observation, and it's hard for different reasons.
It's artificial in a new way, mm-hmm. because there's nothing spontaneous. And with a in-person campus visit, someone's going to walk you across campus to go visit the library, the special collection in the library, or whatever that you know, as part of your schedule, and you'll have possibly some spontaneous or less scripted interactions, but not by Zoom.
Well, and I guess I just want to insert here that for those folks who feel very, very socially awkward, or have a lot of trouble with in-person interactions, mm-hmm. you know, not having to go to campus visit might be a boon.
Well, thanks for mentioning that, because we have a guest post from about 2 months ago that was basically like why distance learning has been a blessing. She didn't use that word, but I can't remember the word, a benefit to neurodivergent academics.
So I can totally see why, like, because you just mentioned the like walking across campus to the library, mm-hmm. and I was thinking, oh, I hate those things. We have to try to figure out something to say, and what if they stick you with an undergrad or a graduate student? Or worse yet, what if the chair of the department walks you to the library? Anyway, we digress.
Well, I don't think it's digressing, no, I guess really. Not. It's actually not. Parsing out at a really fine-grained level, close-grained level, you know, where are the tension points of an in-person visit and where are the tension points of an online visit?
Because I would like it. I'd love to believe that at some point you're going to come back to this podcast. You're going to see in the list the campus visit and you're going to look at it and go, oh, campus visit. I'm getting on a plane tomorrow. I'd like to believe that would happen. So this is a little bit of both things. One thing about the campus visit, and this is true whether you're going to see people in person.
Well, hang on. Why are you talking about this? Because nobody's doing in-person campus
visits. No, I just mean, if the podcast stays online for some number of years, maybe someone will go on a plane. And they'll look on our list and they'll be, oh, it's about the campus visit. And then they'll go, oh, well, it's not on Zoom. So I do want to mention sort of some of the regular things about the real live campus visits. But they also play into the Zoom visit. I'm not going off on a weird tangent. Okay. I'm just trying to say.
Okay. I'm giving Kel a look right now. The only reason I say this is because because everybody's freaking out right now about life right now.
And I'm going to talk about life right now. And it was a poor transition, and I'm sorry I confused you. The point I was trying to make is that it doesn't matter whether you're getting on a plane or you're getting ready to get on Zoom. The most important thing of the campus visit is the research you do beforehand about the people you're going to talk to. That I don't think that people realize, mm-hmm. that understanding people to a level and not past the level into creepy is the work of it.
Yeah, it is. Right? I remember intervention I did years ago. And I was telling them to, like, you know, engage with, you know, so in these individual meetings, you know, as well as breakfast, lunch, dinner, you're going to engage with what they do, the individual does to whom you're talking. And they said, oh, you mean I'm going to have to, like, research that? I was like, yeah. Yeah, you have to research that. This is a major research project, figuring out who the people are, what they do, what their preoccupations are, sussing out to the degree that you can, and don't freak out, okay? People tend to run with this and freak out. To the extent that it's reasonable, try and suss out what some of the political hot points might be in that department, like basic ones, like in an anthro department, cultural anthropology. Are you really methodological? Are you really theoretical? That's an enduring tension point. It doesn't mean it's an ugly political battle, but you're going to want to kind of have a sense of where people fall on that basic
like who you are
spectrum.
Well, and hopefully you figured that out. We talked about last week, you know, how to do the interview, and hopefully you figured out kind of the vibe of the department before you go. But one of the things that I always suggest in prep for the campus visit is to look at the CVs of the people that you're going to be meeting with, mm-hmm. and that you're looking for some key pieces of information. Now, in the in-person campus visit, I give this advice so you can construct questions to carry on conversation. Mm-hmm. So I give advice about how to mine the CV for questions. Mm. This gets a little bit weirder in Zoom because I don't see a lot of Zoom campus visits that have stacked up meeting after meeting after meeting. Mm-hmm. There's some. It's not saying it doesn't happen, but it seems like people are so pressed at this point that there's these big group meetings or two right. or three people on a call, or you're going to meet with the students and the faculty and then mm-hmm. the staff and these big things. So it's harder to do this. But what I have people do is I say, go look at the CV of everybody you're going to meet. Find out where they got their PhD, when they got their PhD, how long they've been at the place that they are. What's your intellectual intersection with them? That mm-hmm. does not mean your collaborative intersection. Mm-hmm. There are going to be people you don't have any, like, mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. And finally, their pace of publication. Mm-hmm. So that helps you answer a whole bunch of questions.
Another thing is, what conferences do they go to?
Right.
Because that's actually something that can often be an entry point for conversations of, oh, I see you were, you know, if it's the big national conference that everyone goes to, that's not as interesting. But if they routinely go to a niche conference that you also go to, that's something you can engage on. Right. Oh, I see you go to such and such. I was there last year and had right. this interesting, I, you know, heard this interesting keynote or something right.
like
and
that. And so if you have the opportunity to have conversations with people individually, you can use that information to ask questions, because a client said this to me many years ago. I had prepped him for a campus interview, and then we talked afterwards because I can't remember why, but anyway, had a follow-up conversation with him, and he said that he realized that basically that the whole prep for the campus visit was questions. You just want to have like a giant portfolio of questions. Mm-hmm. Because you can get in those sessions with people, and the first question, they're not going to do anything but say, do you have any questions for me?
I remember that.
Right. And you're just sitting there like, what?
No, I thought you were going to ask me questions.
Exactly.
Especially in times of fatigue, right. where this is in the olden days when departments had a bunch of searches ongoing and they were just tapped out. And now the fatigue is less coming from that abundance, but rather just from the Zoom world we live in, the pandemic and everything else. Yeah. So, yeah, have a lot of questions that right. you can prepare.
So you can use that information that I was just talking about to mm-hmm. create questions, right? Mm-hmm. So you can say, wow, I see you've been here about 25 years. What's the biggest change you've seen in the department in that
great
time?
Great question.
Oh, wow, I see that you just got tenure. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me about what your tenure process was
right.
like? Oh, you just came from an Ivy to a state school to an Ivy, mm-hmm. mid to this, to this, to this. What do you wish you'd known when you started? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all these questions that you can flip to give people the opportunity to offer their expertise and simultaneously say sort of, I cared enough to look at you.
Yeah.
Now, you don't want to be in the position like, I read your article on blah, 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 and I wonder why you chose to use X theoretical framework. It's like, okay. Wait.
Footnote 17.
Right. Did you read everybody's article and like make notes before? I'm getting a little nervous. We have a friend that I said something about taking a look at work beforehand, and she said, that would creep me out, man. Somebody starts talking to me. She's a senior scholar. That would creep me out.
Anyway, but I want to say something, though.
Okay.
I feel like maybe I 100% agree with everything you've said.
But
I feel like it... I feel like we got out ahead of over our skis a little in the sense of not reminding you of what we said in the last episode that applies even more so at the campus visit, which is reminding you of our core question, who is the job search about?
Right.
And the reason this is so important at the campus visit is because there's way more room for error on a longer campus visit than there is in a 30-minute interview. And so who is the job search about? You think it's about you. They want to know all about me. No, they don't. They don't want to know all about you. The job search is about them. They have a problem. They need a warm body to solve that problem for them. They don't want to have to worry about it anymore. They want a person to stand in front of the classes and teach the classes and basically, you know, bring fame and glory or money, whatever, to the department. But the point is they're really just evaluating you. And in this interesting way, at the campus visit level, this kind of dispassionate way of, are you going to be this person who's going to just do this, solve this problem for us?
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd agree with you. But I think it's really valuable that I don't agree with Karen, because I think you have to hold both of these things in tension.
Well, because the goal here is that people forget, and especially at the campus visit, and they start engaging in monologues about their hopes and their dreams
that's
and their
not
wishes
what I'm talking
and their
about.
Intentions
I'm talking about
and their
this.
Emotions.
I totally get that. What I'm talking about is that I think at the campus visit that people have moved on to, and I certainly remember when I was on searches, that they've moved on to, oh, you're going to be here. Like, okay, we're not screening you now to see if you can do the job.
Right.
Now we're thinking about, I'm going to spend my career with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think it's a little bit more than warm body. I think people are assessing how you ask questions, what you do, your energy level, your affect. Way more.
Are you really negative? Are you,
Are you curious?
Are you curious?
Do you do monologues? Because monologues will turn people. I don't need another. We already got five old white guys doing monologues. Right. We don't need another one.
I mean, I think that's, the problem with speaking is that as soon as you, and this is me I'm talking about now, as soon as you say one thing, you haven't said something else.
Right.
So now it looks like I'm saying this one thing. It sounds like I'm not saying this other thing. Well, obviously, they're meeting you as an individual. There's only three of you coming through. Obviously, they're evaluating your personality at this point. It's just that. I just did an intervention yesterday with someone who swore up and down and sideways that he had read all of my blog posts, and I could tell he had, and he had structured his answers. He was literally reading his answers, and nevertheless, he still ended up with like a 20-sentence long answer to describe your research. And I said, well, how did you get from my blog post or my book chapter to this answer? And he said, well, because I just have to thoroughly explain. I'm not doing justice to my research if I don't explain all these subtleties. And that's what I'm trying to get people to avoid is don't do that. You don't have to feel like you have to thoroughly explain every subtlety of everything you've ever thought or done.
I agree with you. Let's stipulate that neither of us is saying it's the only thing to consider.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we're doing is jointly, we're representing two sides of the coin, two ends of the spectrum, two perspectives that all lead to the same thing. It's not about you. And I would argue at the campus visit, it becomes very much about you. that's where we're saying the same thing.
And both
it's
of
like,
them are true.
Both of them are true. Like, well, I don't want to listen to you on a monologue. And this is where Zoom comes into it. Okay, so let's switch to, okay, campus visit. I'm going to get this kind of research. Now let's just move to this on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
So if you walked into an office and you were going to be there for 30 minutes and you took up a whole bunch of space talking, there's a lot of space around you and a lot of place for people to zone out without being noticed, that they're just like, I have lost interest in you. At Zoom, everybody is fried. We are tired of looking at screens for reasons that nobody I work with can comprehend. What used to be emails now have had to become meetings.
Mm.
And so faculty are on Zoom hours a week. I was talking to a scholar yesterday who's a tenured faculty member, also working in other things, other leadership positions. And we were counting out how many hours a week she had to block off her calendar that she was not available.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost 20 hours a week on Zoom. So you need to make sure that you are getting to your point, saying what you have to say, being concise, not droning on, not wearing them out even further is the point I was trying to get at. Is like, get your point, make your point, get to it. Don't wear them out talking in their, like I just did, wear you out by talking.
Well, so the other thing about campus visits for the people who may not have had an experience with them, and I'm going to talk about the Zoom ones right now. I'll just talk about the Zoom ones, is that you are typically on a campus visit, you're going to have an individual meeting with the department head, probably have an individual meeting with the dean, or maybe with the dean and associate dean. Mm-hmm. So it might be with two or three people, like someone I worked with recently. You will have a meeting with the search committee, and that will be an hour or an hour and a half. And then you will deliver your research, you know, your job talk with Q&A after it. And then there may be some other, you may have the group meeting with grad students or with subsets of the faculty. Like you just said, it's not really individual meetings so commonly like it would be in person. But so those are all normal parts of a campus visit. And so each of those things, you know, I mean, I've written a ton in my book about the campus visit. I have a ton of advice and we have a webinar recording on preparing for the campus visit. And so I just want to, there are people who are doing their first campus visits. So I just wanted to let them know what to expect and mm-hmm. that there are different kind of modes of engagement with each of those populations. So the way you talk to the search committee is going to be one thing. The way you talk to the department head is going to be a somewhat different affect, different approach. And then the dean, something else again. Because the dean may not be, you know, you may be a cultural anthropologist. The dean may be a chemist. And so you're going to have to really think about, what is this dean likely to want with me? What are they likely to tell me? What are mm-hmm. they likely to ask me? And mm-hmm. how can I find a way in to engage with them?
And I also think that you don't want to be surprised, and this does surprise first-time interviewees often, is that you're going to get asked the same questions over and over again. So just to be, you know, clear, this year I've had quite a bit fewer campus visit conversations with people than I normally have, and they have run the gamut. So they have been two-day, back-to-back, half-an-hour meetings with faculty.
Seriously?
Yep. Mm. With a break in between. Mm-hmm. And in a second, I'll talk with you about what to do with that break. And I've had ones that are half a day and they are jammed in a way that is just stupefying. So wow. It's like, hi, here you are. You're going to give your job talk. Oh, now you're going to give your teaching demonstration. Now you're going to meet with the students. Now you're going to talk to the chair. Now you're going to do the search committee. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And so which is worse? Who knows?
Yeah.
But and everything in between. So I'm giving you the two extremes, but everything in between. In those things, you will do, like Karen says, you're going to get groups, you're going to get individuals. It depends on the university you're at. Are you going to get groups of undergraduates? Or are you going to get groups of graduate students? Also depends on whether, you know, I had a campus visit the other day where they didn't meet with the search committee. Instead, they met with the individual members of the search committee. So there's a whole bunch of variations that can happen. Mm-hmm. The reality is you're going to answer versions of the same questions over and over again. Mm-hmm. It's okay to repeat yourself.
Yeah.
It's okay to have a brand and deliver it over right. and over and over again.
And it's a campaign platform, right. as we often say. Right. So you stand for, right. you know, basic things in research and methods and theory and pedagogy and contribution.
Right. right. So really knowing that that's true. So don't feel like you have to prepare for dramatically different questions. You know, you may have a faculty member say, why are you interested in this job? You may have a dean ask you, how do you see yourself contributing to the university of blah, blah, blah. The material in those answers is the same, just reshaped. The thing you have to prepare for differently is the questions that you ask those groups, right? So you're not going to ask the search committee, what are the expectations for tenure?
Right.
You're going to ask the dean that. Mm-hmm. You're not going to ask
And possibly the department head.
Yeah, depending on who you got.
Probably actually the department
highest,
head.
The
because,
highest ranking
yeah.
person.
Or, but if the dean is a chemist and you're a cultural anthropologist, the dean's not going to be able to answer
right,
you.
True, you have to go to department head.
Necessarily. Yeah. He or she may be able to give you generic advice that's valuable, but not as targeted as the department head.
Mm-hmm. And this is very cynical on my behalf, but I also feel like the higher the rank, the more people are used to talking. And they're used to taking up space. Mm-hmm. So the more questions you ask them, the more they spend time telling you their expertise, which tends to leave a favorable opinion of you
yeah.
when they get to talk about their own mm-hmm. expertise. And you can learn a lot. So getting back to the whole Zoom thing and how it plays out, right? So you may have four meetings of a ton of people, very stressful, hard to figure out how to, you're going to try to like, how do I meet the needs of all these people? You got to get out of that mindset quickly. And it has to be in the back of, back into the, how am I going to present myself in a way that's accessible for people who are exhausted at looking at people. When it's the one after another meetings, it's really, really important at the end of every meeting when you have that break, you are going to be compelled to end a meeting. You'll think of what went wrong and you're going to want to get online and figure out how to do the next one better. Don't leave. Leave your desk, stretch, drink water, go to the bathroom, do whatever. It's the same advice I give to people on the physical job campus visit. Every time you're being walked from one meeting to another, assuming it's a different person every time, go to the bathroom, go in the stall, do some Raffi, shake your sillies out, do some yoga stretches, get to a position of not being surveilled for just a couple minutes so you can get your reactivity, your whole system back down to somewhere closer to baseline, because otherwise by the end of it, you're just like, I cannot hear the words you're saying to me. So.
Yeah, I actually think disassociation is probably really easy, so much easier on Skype than it is on in person. But maybe not. Maybe it just has to do with what triggers you. But focus and concentration seems very difficult.
Focus is really hard. The other groovy part about a groovy. Did I just use that word?
Did.
Whoa. I'm going to just flash back to my 70s youth. The other groovy part about a Skype visit is you can put bullet points on post-its and put it on your computer screen so you don't have to remember everything and you can look and glance as if you are thinking and look and go, oh, those are the bullet points I was going to make, right? But it's got to be bullet points, folks. Right. Don't write out sentences.
Right, because we can tell instantly
if you're
reading.
I can tell when you're reading. I can tell right away when you're reading.
Yeah.
But I can't tell whether you've just done a look up and out as you're thinking and you're looking at your bullet points off to the side. So be sure. Go ahead.
And actually scatter the bullet points on different post-its at different places. Right. So you're not, because if also if you're constantly looking to this exact same spot to your lower right, they're going to be like, what the heck is she looking at over there?
Right.
So anyway, yeah.
So it's the beautiful part about the campus visit because, you know, what I recommend on campus is that you carry a portfolio with micro notes, like a little cheat sheet on every single person that you look at right before you walk in their office. All right, this guy studies geography and he's interested in the geography of place and he's looking at the politics of blah, blah, blah. Okay, right. Got it. He's been here since, you know, 1985. Got it. Okay. Now I'm going in here and I have, at least I remember who you are. And so that kind of cheat sheet you can still use in a campus visit. So don't feel like you have to memorize everything about them.
Right.
Because it's just, we don't have the concentration skills right now to do that.
And it's not reasonable anyway.
Yeah. And it's not possible in the, I was talking to some people today that basically they've changed their work window, like their production window to 5 minutes. Write for 5 minutes, go to their brain starts to go, oh, I heard the best line today in a group meeting.
Yeah.
We're in the middle of a pandemic coup. That is somebody on Twitter. She couldn't remember who it was to cite it. So whoever you are, props. Serious. We're in the middle of a pandemic coup. Of course, when this comes out next Tuesday, it'll be the day before the inauguration. But
I don't even know if I can survive.
Anyway, in the middle of a pandemic coup, we are not capable of thinking for any length of time. So if you know that about yourself, know that about the people listening to you. All right?
They're
you need
not
to
special.
Deliver them information right. in really concise, short bits for them to be able to handle.
Do you want to say anything about the job talk?
Oh, so many things about the job talk.
Briefly, just, you know, in terms of we're giving, this is our compendium of advice.
For the campus visit.
For the campus visits, job talk, and the teaching demo are both. Oh, by the way, neither of us, neither you nor I, do coaching for teaching demos, but we have someone on the staff who does, named Dr. Kate Dugan. She's marvelous, and she just wrote the most fantastic blog post. It's just, so you just go back through the blog. It's like, you know, it's in the last two or three, and it's called basically the Zoom teaching demo, 8 guideposts.
Yeah.
And do check it out because the advice is just brilliant.
Before we go on to the job talk, I do want to say one more thing about the campus visit on Zoom. One of the things that makes such a huge difference in the campus visit, why a campus visit, why most people don't hire off of a like the first initial interview, is how important how we move in space and our physicality is to people understanding us. And you guys have gotten much, much better being on Zoom and letting yourselves be present. When I used to work with people for interview interventions, they would sit like robots and I'd have to say, okay, your whole body is involved in this thing. And now that people are teaching so much on Zoom, they're definitely getting better at it. But the most important thing I want to make sure that you understand is the camera has to be back. So at least your shoulders are in the thing. If it comes down to mid chest, that's perfect. But you don't want to get, it's not just your neck and head. And I see a lot of people like they have their neck and head stuck into the camera. Mm-hmm. And that means people can't see your shoulders move. They can't see your hands move. Mm-hmm. And if you saw me right now, my hands are moving all the time when I talk. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. But what you don't want to do is just look like the big giant head stuck staring at the screen. You want to give them a chance to see you. Express yourself in whatever way that is for you. You may not be a hand talker. Mm-hmm. You may sit relatively still when you talk. That's no problem. You don't have to become who you're not, but just let them see that so they see your body move a little bit. And to be clear, I'm not talking about like the wavy armed things
still
outside.
I dance my dissertation.
Right, those wavy arm things outside the auto supply stores, right? Or auto stores. Right. What I mean is just... that you're a whole human, you're not just a head.
Mm-hmm.
Even though sometimes I know when you're working, it feels like you're just a head. So I did want to say that quickly. Make sure your framing is good back up. Make sure that you're not backlit. Make sure that there's not a bright light on one side of your face so you look like you're in Phantom of the Opera. Just make sure in advance that you have decent lighting, mm-hmm. okay? And that they can see you. Now, job talk. Most important thing I can tell you about your job talk is here are the two most important things I can tell you. Two biggest mistakes I see people make in a job talk. Number one is that you think the job talk is there for you to prove the value of your research. Mm. And the value of your research has already been decided. That's why they invited you. Don't go into it with a mindset, I'm going to prove to you this is good. Go into it with a mindset of an intellectual conversation among colleagues. Mm-hmm. That you are showing your ability to present information, where you think, what your sort of the milieu you operate in and how you deliver information to people who don't care,
mm-hmm.
which will show how you teach.
And a range, even if it isn't an interdisciplinary search committee or whatever audience, there's even within one department, there are a range of sub-disciplines represented in every department. And then in many cases, we're talking to literally interdisciplinary audiences.
Exactly.
And so you have to be able to pitch it very intelligently. You know, you're a scholar. It is a work of scholarship, but it is also accessible to non-specialists.
Right.
And that's threading a needle, and it's hard. And yeah, it is hard. And that, you know, academia is hard. So please know, of course, that the blog and the book are absolutely filled to the brim with advice on the job talk. I have countless columns on Chronicle Vitae about the job talk. I have a whole webinar recording about the job talk. So there's a lot of information available for you.
And if you've been listening to this podcast for any length of time, you'll notice that Karen does not have any problem telling you what she does, how she does it, and how valuable it is. I suck at that. And I will tell you this much. The job talk strategy session that I do, which is a 30-minute, this is what a job talk is session, I believe is one of the most valuable things that I do beyond Unstuck. I think my transformational work is in Unstuck.
Unstuck productivity program.
Right. The art of productivity.
The art of productivity. Yes.
But... in terms of immediate interventions, and I know transforming people's job experience is the job talk. Mm-hmm. And I've had so many people come and tell me that they had the search chair tell them it's the best job talk they'd ever heard.
And you know what's interesting about your job talk intervention, and I love this, and I want you guys to really, like, really grapple with what I'm about to say. Kel does not listen to your job talk.
Nope.
She doesn't read it. She doesn't edit it. She doesn't discuss your job talk at all, because the intervention that you do, the service you created, which is what you're talking about right now, is pre-writing.
Yeah.
It's how do you, How do you conceive of the job talk for this job? Once you've done that, how is it best to be organized generic sense? And it's and so this is going to come as a huge shock to people who think, no, I've written out this research paper. Now I'm going to deliver it. It's like, no, you're not. Yeah, like, no. Step back. We're starting again from ground zero.
Right.
Because you have, people fundamentally misunderstand the nature, the very genre of a job talk, it is meant to achieve, how it is meant to be pitched, what it should cover. And so your intervention is what sets their minds right.
Right. And just to wrap up that, the second biggest mistake I see people make.
I already said that.
No, I said the first one is that you think.
To prove the value of the research.
Okay. The second huge mistake that you make is you think you're supposed to talk about all of your research.
Mm-hmm.
You think you're supposed to talk about your whole book, your whole dissertation.
Harkening back to where I started when I was saying, but I have to explain every single nuance. Right. No, you don't.
Right. And so if you have written a job talk that is, let me tell you about my dissertation, you are off the rails. Mm-hmm. You are finding a piece of research, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that goes before this, folks. I have an outline that is, crafted out of blood, sweat, and tears of listening to so many fucking bad job talks. Oh my God. I will tell you that I created this service because we used to have a job talk intervention, and people would come and they would perform their job talk for me, and they were bad. And then I was stuck with, your interview was in a week. How much do I have you fix? And I could not stand the moral dilemma of, okay, bye. Good luck on that job. No. So I ditched that and said, I'm talking to you before it happens.
So anyway, it's called a job talk strategy session. Yeah. And that's what this is that we're talking about.
So there's a whole bunch of complicated stuff to get to this point. But in the middle of the job talk, you are taking one small piece of research that has methods and results. Humanities, don't at me. You have methods and results. And you talk about what you did to showcase who you are and how you do it and how you fit. Mm-hmm. That decision right there of what you choose is the single most important decision of the job talk. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't speak to the call, why are you doing it?
Yeah.
So I just got off on my preaching about the job talk as we wrap up the campus visit. But
that's the whole point.
What we have said, and I believe we still believe, is job talks will save you. Save a shitty visit. Job talks will kill a perfect visit. You cannot get a job with a bad job talk.
Yeah.
That's my...
Yeah, well, no, I have written those words.
I probably read them somewhere from some person who knows this shit.
Yeah.
All right. Long, long, long session.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. Good luck out there.
Bye.
Bye.